It's the Sports Hangover with Gus Kattengill.
Hello, sports fans.
Well, hello there.
Local sports, national sports. The GCAT has got you covered.
Oh, you made a wise choice, my friend.
Time to tee it up and let it fly. It's the Sports Hangover with Gus Kattengill.
Check it out, John.
998-1003. The way to chime in to the conversation of the Rooter Man Can caller and guest hotline. Hour 2 was brought to you by Chris's Paving. Go to chrispaving.com to check out all the services that they can provide for you. From driveways to parking lots to overlays, locally owned, your asphalt and concrete paving contractor for New Orleans and the Bayou regions. Paving it at all. Call 985-960-2131. And hour one is brought to you by No Wake Outfitters, your one-stop shop for all things fishing and kayaking over on the Gulf Coast. 1926 Airline Drive will be there on the 12th for our first remote over there. Looking forward to that here as well. Been talking Pels, been talking LSU, Iowa. Jack's been patient. Thank you for holding on, sir. What do you have for us today?
Hey, Gus, how you doing? Gus, I called really to talk about the LSU game last night, but I was listening to Willie Green, and I'm listening to your analysis. I believe what you're saying is the construction of the roster is not perfect if you're trying to get to a championship. I believe that's what you're saying.
Yeah.
Okay,
I think that's part of the problem that you're having right now, too, and in that, I don't know. I feel like right now there's an identity crisis on this team.
Well, see, that's why I really don't like coach interviews, because all he can do is point to Alvarado being hurt. Because if he starts pointing fingers at other guys, where does that get him? And then he loses the locker room, and then it's really over. So he can't do that. He can't give you straight answers. So, because I might be way off here, but what I believe is, there's two guys on the team that I really like and that most people really like. But I think ultimately, if you're going to get the way you want to go, they're not on the team. And one of them is Jonas, and one of them is CJ, because you're paying him way too much money for what you get out of him. I mean, there's some games where he's just awesome, but, I mean, he doesn't really, you know, he doesn't run the yard. I know they can think they can do point Zion, but I think ultimately you need a guard doing that. And I think for what you're paying CJ, I don't think he gives you that on a night-to-night basis.
Yeah. No, like I said, that's what I mean by the fact that I think when there's three things that just stood out to me in these games here. And obviously, I think if you win, you feel differently. But I think there's reasons why you maybe haven't, you know, on that. And I think one of the other aspects, too, that they're missing, I think Zion's developing it, you know, from you go to the OKC game, when he goes, hey, I got to demand the ball better. And he did against Milwaukee. And you see that emotion in the last month where he's yelling, he's, you know, getting teed up. I mean, you're starting to see him grow into that. And that's why I keep trying to tell people, I know he's been in the league a while. I know some of these guys have done that. But they are playing against teams that have guys that have been doing it for a lot longer. Maybe not even together, but just been doing it for a lot longer and are better. I mean, there are. I mean, they're legit all-star players, all-pro players in the finals, things of that nature. The only team that kind of goes against that to an extent is OKC. I would argue they're just as young, if not younger, than New Orleans in terms of years. So, but that's what I'm getting at. Like, what is the issue here? What is it that has them still, as coach says, flat to start the game? You know, here's what he said.
I can't put my finger on exactly what it was, but we'll definitely look at the film and try to make some corrections on that.
So is that a personality thing?
Yeah.
Again, going to the construction of the team in terms of you need to find a player like that. And again, I think you have a player like that helps in Jose, but you agree with me, right? I'm not being disrespectful, but if you're telling me the Pelicans are going to win or lose depending on Jose Alvarado's playing, they're in trouble.
Oh, no, but I, like I said, I just think he's using that because he's got to answer the question, and he can't say what he really thinks. Because no matter whose team Alvarado's on, he's a backup. He's not the guy you're counting on every night. But no, and look, as far as Zion goes, I'm very happy with since the first of the year, Zion's been a much better player. His attitude seems like it improved. He seems to be giving a lot greater effort, and I guess that's because, you know, like you said, you think he's in better shape than he was before. I think he has to develop some kind of shot, not a three-point shot, but some other shot from, you know, 10 to 15 feet. He has to do that. Also, the same thing, the kid who just came back, the one from Australia, I know he's a great, really good defensive player, but he's got to give you something on offense. He can't be a zero.
Right.
And then, Gus, where do you think Trey – is Trey a small forward? Is he a small – is he a shooting guard? Where do you think his position is? Do you think he's a starter, or do you think he comes off the bench?
It's a good question, man, because he's coming up on that contract extension. And I can tell you that is something that is talked about a ton, you know, just amongst people that cover the team. You know, is he a max player? Is he a not? You know, like, do you risk losing him? Do you not? Like, do you kind of offer? Is it? And I think the biggest thing with Trey is you see the flashes of the potential. He can get down the lane and dunk. He can rebound. He had an 11-point rebound game. So that shows, hey, if he's focused on doing that, he's capable of doing that. He does play with energy, and that's something that's sort of needed. He can knock down threes. Look, without his threes last night, they're not in that game in the first half. So you see his ability to do that. On a defensive side, you can see him at times be able to be aggressive and all that. I think for him, it's more of a consistency thing, developing consistency, developing the confidence in other aspects of that game, and I think there's growth. Now, does that only happen, Jack, if you give him the start, you know, the starting lineup? But but I guess I would say this. He has been starting since B.I. went out. What do you feel his impact is on this game, on this team? Like, are the Pels winning or losing because he's starting?
Right. There's definitely a drop-off, so I guess he's got to improve. He doesn't give you what B.I. does. There's no doubt about that. So, you're right. I guess they got a decision to make.
Right.
Hey, Gus, look, I just wanted to, like I said, I called to talk about the game last night, the LSU game. Look, I'll be honest with you, Gus. I hadn't watched any women's basketball at all, and I didn't anticipate watching much of the game last night, but the Pelicans were so bad that I turned the channel. So, look, first of all, Caitlin, the hype is real. You know, she is all that in a bag of chips. She's everything they said she was. Her skill level is really, I mean, a lot of people say that, you know, depending on the team, you know, this is my team, you know, this is my team. No, it's her team. Because even, I mean, and I'm telling y'all stuff you know already.
Sure.
I mean, it's not just her scoring. Everything that happens positively on that team is because of her. All right? It is her team. I don't know what that team looks like if she's not on it. Probably not. They're definitely not in the tournament, I wouldn't think. But Gus, this is just an observation, and please correct me, because like I said, that's the only game I watch. And I don't hear people saying this. LSU lost, you hear all the time that the fundamentals with the women is a lot better. But LSU lost last night, well, actually lost any chance to win last night because their fundamentals were terrible. They couldn't hit free throws, and they completely dominated Iowa on the boards and couldn't make layups.
They couldn't make shots. Well, the other aspect of it too, Jack, and it's the difference. She hit nine. LSU struggled from beyond the arc. Dude, have a three-point shooter? You know what I'm saying? Like, when you think of the national championship last year, I thought Jack brought it up really good, Jack Benjamin. They had some big threes that were knocked down by other people, not named Angel Reese, in that game, right? Right before halftime, a big three there. It's just, in today's basketball, men, women, college pros, if you can't shoot the three or have a player, I mean, at least you can say, well, Trey can be a three-point shooter. At least Jordan, in theory, can be. You better be able to, one way, shape, or form. If not, man, it's going to be, you know, really, really tough, I think, to kind of see how teams can sort of win like that. Plus, I thought, you know, and again, I'm critiquing it, why I think that game went the way it did. Haley Van Lith looked lost a lot of times on the defensive end. I'm just going by body language or even on the offensive end.
Right.
where she literally had her hands out. You know, like, where am I supposed to go on the balls on the other wing? She's on the right wing. She, you know, didn't move, stayed there. Like, I don't know if maybe the players, if it was getting late in that game and they got it to within 10, they're just kind of like taking it upon themselves and do it and didn't, you know, haven't played with her. I don't know. It was just the whole shape of that team this year was a little odd. I know they had some injuries and things of nature, but I never felt like that team was a good team, if that makes sense. I think you had occasionally, individually good nights and good plays. I again, just me, I don't particularly think Angel Reese's season was anywhere near to last year with her, you know?
Right.
I thought this was, you know, Flajay Johnson's team, to be honest with you. I think she was the best player on the LSU court, like, by far. She has the most skill set, the quickest, can get to the rim and do those things, can defend. So I think I would have been surprised if LSU would have been to the national championship game this year, to be honest with you. And it just the way the whole season started, I mean, you know, Angel Reese being on or off the team, not going on road trips, you know, Kim Mulkey saying, how dare you even ask me about it? And I'm like, what? You know, so, I mean, it's just the whole season was just different.
And, Gus, like I said, my criticism is probably not valid at all. I watched that game last night. So, hey, look, Gus, one last question, and I'll just hang up and listen to your response.
Yeah.
McCarthy has been supposedly flying up the draft boards, you know, the quarterback of Michigan.
Yeah.
And Harbaugh's been talking him up. But here's the thing. The Chargers have, I think, the fifth pick in the draft. Do you think maybe McCarthy's talking him up so he'll get a trade offer to go down? You know, that way he can pick up some picks and, you know what I mean? Talk him up to try to get somebody to go for it. And,
mm-hmm.
You know.
Well, I'll say this to you. One of the things that stands out to me about specifically what you're kind of touching on right now is I my eyes. I go by eyes, dude. And are you telling me that J.J. McCarthy's the fourth, fifth best player in the NFL? You know what I'm saying? Like in the draft, I think it's nice. I look at today's NFL. The defenders are faster. You got to make quick decisions. Now, again, Brock Purdy, maybe, hey, if you know where you're going with the ball and you're coachable and can lead, maybe that works. But Adam Schefter today spoke, and I'm trying to find it here. He specifically had this to say about J.J. McCarthy.
It's also possible that after 3 weeks from now, that these teams might not see the need to go do that. They might just sit where they are. You know, there's a lot of this jockeying talk in advance. And then come draft day, you have to see what happens. What were we talking about last year? What team is going to trade up for Will Levis? Where did Will Levis go? Round two. Now, I don't think J.J. McCarthy's going round two. I think he's going round one. But I don't know that it will wind up that somebody trades up for him. Maybe he just goes 11 or 12.
Hmm. The guy that he thinks may go in the first round, that is surprising.
I think that Michael Penix is going to find his way into round one, is the sound of it to me. Now, again, there's still 3-plus weeks left in the process. Teams still are doing their evaluations and interviews and all sorts of work on various prospects. But I think Michael Penix has clearly impressed teams to the point where, to me, I think he's going to be a one.
There you go. So he thinks he'll be a first-round pick. Go ahead.
Oh, no, Gus, I might just be imagining things, but I just wonder if Harbaugh really believes in this guy that much, or if he's just trying to talk him up. You know, like, for instance, I think Denver has, like, what, the 8th or 9th pick?
12.
It'd be sweet if he go down to 9 and got a couple more draft picks and still ends up with the guy he wants. That would be nice if he could engineer that somehow.
Yeah.
But Gus, getting back to your point about him, look, I'm not saying they're the same player at all. But I always worry about guys like that, Mac Jones, you know, because like you were saying when he came out, the team around him at Alabama was so good, it was kind of hard to tell how good he was. I think you could say the same thing here. The team at Michigan around him was really good. Most Saturdays, he didn't have to do anything at all but hand the ball off. Mm. So, you know, how good is he? I'm not saying he's not good. I'm saying you really, it's hard to tell.
Jack, do you like hot dogs?
Sure.
Just saw this on Twitter. The Pirates have named a new food item called the Renegade, a foot-long hot dog topped with potato, what, pierogies? They look like dumplings, pot roast, pickles, and onions. I don't know why it would come up. Wow. I mean, take the hot dog out of it. I mean, you're going to put pot roast in there, pickles, and potato dumplings, essentially, is what it looked like. How am I even getting to the hot dog? You know what I'm saying? I don't know. I don't know if I'm down on that.
You remember a couple of years ago where this Kansas City Royals came up with some dish? It was like, look, it's a bunch of stuff that I like individually, but I don't want it all on one thing. I think it was like Reese's peanut butter, bacon, cheese, and I forget what was the main part of it. It might have been a hot dog. I don't know. All in one thing. It just, you know, all together. Like I said, individually, like all of those things, but all piled onto one sandwich, not so much.
But yeah, I'm with you. Thank you, Jack.
Anyway, guys, have a good day. Thanks.
Sounds good. Appreciate it so much. Shay Dixon reposting a Matthew Brune post. Covers LSU for Bengal Tiger on 3. Says four-star 2025 guard Bella Hines has committed to LSU. One of the top scorers in her class, the New Mexico guard, a massive get for the Tigers. So LSU getting a recruit yesterday, or today, rather, just a little bit ago. When we take a break, we'll come back. Ali Cosell will help us kind of look at the Pels' final 7 games here. And what does he take away? I got 3 things. I got lack a little mentality, that dog mentality. And Willie Green says that Devin Booker has. What is their identity right now? And point Z, what are the pros and cons on that? Is it good, I think, for him? Is it taking away Jonas? Is it not? I don't know. I'll ask. Next on ESPN New Orleans.
Hey, let's get this show on the road, eh?
Now back to the Sports Hangover with Gus Kattengau.
800-998-1003. As we will hear from Ali Cosell here in a minute. Here, buddy, if you can give him a buzz and we can talk a little bit about the Pels here. One of the things that Willie Green was talking about yesterday, too, was the ability of when bigs are standing there waiting to defend Z and what that does.
We'll first keep the floor space, and Zion's got to continue to navigate those concepts. And it's okay to hit our fives spaced out because our fives can make plays to our wings guards, and it's hard for the big to get back to them. But another adjustment for us is just going small and making them have to guard us.
Ali Cosell joins us, covers the Pelicans in the NBA. Ali, good afternoon to you, sir. How are you?
Hey, Gus, doing well. How about yourself, buddy?
I need help. let's just start here. I wrote down 3 things that just this morning. I was kind of thinking about what am I feeling after these last couple of games here in this homestand, an all-important homestand. And, you know, I'm hearing in these 4 games, 3 of which have been losses, phrases and things we've heard at times this season, right? Come out flat, ball stagnant, not passing, playing small ball, not rebounding, coming out flat, not matching the energy, things of that nature. We can touch on all of that more, but the word identity keeps popping up in my head. So I'm going to ask you, what is the Pelicans' identity? Because I don't know.
It is not. Yeah, it's obviously defense first, but that defense has to be opportunistic to where you're forcing turnovers, to where you're causing these either bad shots or something along those lines, and then you're getting out and running. The Pelicans have not played with any pace over these last 6 games where they've been without B.I. And you look, and the numbers fully support that. It shows it. I mean, last night, Pelicans didn't get their first transition bucket until right before halftime. So they're not getting those easy opportunities. That's what they need to do, right? And look, it's one thing to stop a Devin Booker, Kevin Durant, or whatever star you've been playing these last couple of weeks. That's another where it's also translating on the other end. And like I said, it's stopping you from doing what you prefer to do. And like I said, for the Pelicans, that's what it is, Gus. So they need to find it because they're missing what I think is their point guard, the guy that can help you not only get you 20 points, but he makes everybody else around him get better shots, right? The quality of shots have gone down. I mean, look at how difficult the shots were for CJ and Trey to begin that game, and luckily they made a few, right? So you thought it was going to be a competitive game, but
okay. No,
the Pelicans didn't play at all to their identity last night. It's really hard, I think, for them to do so, and they don't have B.I., but they've got to figure it out.
Okay, so that's one aspect of it. Small ball. Heard this phrase a lot. Mm-hmm. again, I know it's a lot of games, and I tend to have a glass of wine or two, maybe too many. I just don't remember two-thirds of the season this team playing small ball. And if that was the case, that that's what they wanted to do to beat the better teams in this league, then you probably should have done something at the trade deadline to help you with that if you're not going to play Jonas. I'm confused by this. I don't know how a guy that can give you double-digit rebounds prevents you from winning. I don't remember many games where I'll text you, man, Jonas killed the Pels tonight. I just don't remember doing that, and I'm just struggling to understand the reason for it. You know the numbers better than I do, I guess. I don't know. Is what you're getting without him worth more than you would get with him on the court, I guess is what I'm asking.
So far they haven't, right? Numbers show it. The bench, ever since they've lost Trey, they're not getting any kind of scoring. When you're going to play Larry upwards of, you know, well over 20 minutes a game, and he's not being a factor, right? Opposing teams aren't even guarding him. And, yes, he hit a couple of threes yesterday, and he has to continue to try and, you know, get you 10 points because he's going to be going one-on-one and oftentimes maybe one-on-zero until he gets closer to the lane, right, closer to the rim. But, yeah, to play small ball, you've got to have, honestly, five guys that can stretch the floor usually or at least run.
Okay.
And we're not really seeing that either, right? And that's been the biggest problem. And I'm with you. I don't understand moving away from JV, especially when this team is kind of starving for offense. Right? Look how well the Suns played last night. They didn't have any issues with Nurkic being out there, no matter who was out there for the Pelicans. It wasn't ever any kind of disadvantage for them. And that's I feel like that's the way the Pelicans almost have to play. But Willie's obviously moved away from that. Jonas didn't see even 20 minutes a game on average last month. And we saw this begin before the trade deadline. So to your point, I think you're exactly right. If you wanted to go in this direction, you had the opportunity to move away from, right, whether it was Jonas or finding at least some kind of other third big that you could rely on that fits this team better.
Point Zion is the other thing I wrote down on the sheet of paper here as to what I'm seeing. I think you're seeing him look at 30 points last night. You saw at times in each of the teams that they've played so far in the homestand, Ollie, the ability to look dominant, unstoppable, whether it was the Celtics, the Bucks, you know, OKC at times, even last night against the Suns, he can get to the bucket whenever he wanted to and stuff like that. You saw them then adjust, and he sort of had to do that or not. So I think on one side of a coin, I like it. It helps. But, Ollie, are there numbers? Is it a gut feeling? But why do I feel like, is it, you know, keeping Jonas, keeping CJ from being himself or being so up and down? I don't know. What are the, I guess, the down effects of having Zion be point Zion and be a ball handler?
Well, for right now, they have to rely on it, right? Because there's no Brandon Ingram. And I think Brandon Ingram gives this team a comfortable floor. Right? That's why I call him the team's point guard. You know that he's going to stretch defenses, that he's going to make the right pass. And he can honestly see the floor better, right? He's just more advanced than Zion because he hasn't played enough, I feel like. He needs a couple more years to catch up. Because with Z, it's usually a drive and a kick, but it's always that first pass, right? So the short corner, maybe on a roll that Zion sees. But B.I., you know, how many times have we seen him skip across court, right? He sees everything. He seems to be able to figure out where the hole is in the defense and how to attack it. As far as Z has to rely on, usually creating something with off the dribble. And when you're getting loaded up with two or three guys, that becomes right problematic. All of a sudden, point Zion's hard to be effective when the other team only has to either take him away and that first pass. That's not hard to do when you've got five guys that can stop you. So that's where I think Willie today mentioned, that's where the Pelicans just have to trust each other better and honestly probably make more passes, right, make better reads. And that includes everybody. Almost everybody has to become a connector. And when we've seen them, right, at their best, you've seen that ball movement, right? So where then suddenly Najee on the weak side is able to break down his man because that guy's trying to recover back to him to contest the shot or something along those lines to Jose.
Right.
And we haven't seen that, right, these last 2 weeks. One thing I do have to mention, Willie did bring up good point today, is that most of these opponents they've faced here recently, these last six games that coincide with B.I. being out, the fact that they've been top-tier defensive teams, right? If you look, right, Boston, top 10, OKC, top 10, and there's I think Milwaukee has played better, right, to that level since they figured things out after Doc Rivers has landed there. So
right.
it's just a comp, you know, Gus, it's just a big mess right now because everything's combined to where you're facing great opponents, you're missing your key guy, and suddenly you have to win these games when all of a sudden, right, this West has gotten so condensed and the Pels are going to have to hang on for dear life, right, to stay in the top six.
So how do I feel with seven games left, two games left on the homestand? How should I feel?
Well, first of all, the schedule, I think, gets a little bit easier, right? Suddenly those top five, top ten teams are no longer in the schedule. That's where you have to come out with and play for, right? You can't have the excuse they had last night. That's why I think everybody's hoping that if they just play their best band of basketball, everybody plays with force, then they should be okay at least defensively. But yet, here we go. Devin Booker gets 24 points first quarter. He had 25 in January in the first quarter. And you already saw him, right, match that point total for the game. And I thought, you know, for as great of a defender as Herb is, I feel like the team didn't execute well enough on that end to where, okay, if he's got it rolling, let's just throw a double team. Don't let him snip another shot. Or with Herb, don't help off on another player to where, right, we saw Devin have some open shots in that first half. So you got to be more committed, right? You have to do everything better. And really, that's what it's going to take, I think. But like I said, you feel better because, look, I know Orlando's tough, but they're a team that doesn't play well on the road. And then you've got the Spurs coming up. So, yes, there's Victor Wembanyama, but they've shut down two of their other best players, right? Sochan and Vassell. So there's more opportunities now where you don't have to play that perfect to win. So that's why I'm hopeful. The Suns, on the other hand, Gus, I don't know if you've looked at their schedule. They have to finish out the season playing only teams that are over 500. So they've got a much tougher schedule than, say, the Pels.
Yeah, I'm with you. When I was looking at, well, they got the Clippers in there twice, and they got some teams on there. So I guess, though, this comes back to trying to rebound and get going here on the other aspect of it on Wednesday. The other thing I wrote down, too, was Willie Green said, hey, Devin Booker's just got that dog mentality and things of that nature. I feel like that's probably something work on, get a player that sort of has that, I don't know, you know, bring in a Pat Bev or somebody like, so I who's the guy? Zion's developing that. We've seen that from him, right? Getting teed up, yelling, arguing, and doing that. But to his point, as he said it even after the Boston loss, is like, we need to match that with elsewhere. Is that a personality thing where just some of those players aren't kind of built that way?
Well, Zion is an experience because we see him, right? And you mentioned it. He turns it on. At some point during the game, he's going to find it, get rolling. And that's why he does. And that's why it hurts not having B.I. Now you're asking Zion to come out first minute and be that player that you see in the third quarter or wherever he's got it rolling. Second problem is there's really nobody else on the roster that can do that for you in terms of leading the offense, right, and playing with that kind of force. CJ's too small. Trey doesn't have enough of that game yet. We see him, right? He's trying to dribble more, get to the rim more. Found some success, I thought, against Milwaukee. Tried it last night, didn't work, right? He slipped and fell on one play, I clearly remember. Same thing with Herb. He's better in transition. So that's the problem, right? Who do you turn to? I don't know how you can turn to anybody because there's nobody with that type of experience. So that's where I think Willie's right. It has to start on defensive end. You can't be getting, you know, lost in your assignment, whether it's your guarding a Booker or on rotations, right? The rotations were bad yesterday. How many times did Nurkic get an easy dunk or you had the wrong guy trying to box him out because there was CJ down there, right? You can't have those things.
I know.
Right? So, yeah, all of a sudden everybody's got to raise their game. That's as simple as that. And I thought one person did that last night, right? And it was kind of surprising.
Dyson Daniels?
Right? Dyson looked for his shot.
Yeah.
I thought he played with the best force defensively. You got to have that from more people, though.
Yeah, I am with you, and I think that was one of the things that stood out to me from him from that standpoint that, you know, he's got that size and everything, and I think for him it's also about that confidence aspect of it, man. If he can kind of get going and drive and do that, I think that'll help you here as well. Look, I tried to, at the beginning of the show, say there's a frustration level. You want to see them win. You want to do that, and then you have to kind of compare it to reality in this aspect of it, right? And that's, you look at the West, man, it's ridiculous. I mean, there's so much talent. There's so much skill level. Each of those teams that are above or around the Pels have legit players and superstars. And I don't mean that to be disrespectful, you know, Ollie, but, I mean, there's no one on the roster that's to the level of Devin Booker, Kevin Durant, or, you know, I take Anthony Edwards right now. I mean, Jamal Murray and Jokic. I mean, I can go on and on. I think maybe Zeke can get there, and I think B.I. at his best can be a good all-star player. But you know what I'm saying? It's like they're trying to hold off or battle or be with teams that I think are further along or star or all-star players that are better skill set-wise that can take over games and drop 40, 50 points and things of that nature. So I think we just have to pace it with it is still an infancy learning for them. Am I wrong on that?
No, you're not. That's exactly right. They're just not at that stage where all these other teams you mentioned are at right now. I mean, hey, we're about to get through a season where Zion, knock on wood, right? There's still seven games, but he's about to make it through his first full season as a pro. That's huge, right? He's about to play in his first play-in/playoff. That's huge. And I think Brandon Ingram largely has been the most consistent force, but you're right. He hasn't been that star, but maybe he will be, like he was 2 years ago against Phoenix, right? Remember how he elevated this game. So there's still a lot of question marks, and they still got to figure things out, like better utilizing. I'm with JV, right? Getting Trey easier shots, right? They've got to come up with, because they've got enough weapons, right? You feel like they just have to get to them and make use of them better.
Ollie, as always, man, appreciate the time. Thank you so much.
Absolutely, Gus. Hopefully, next time we talk, we'll be a little bit better mood, right?
We'll be right back at the arena tomorrow at OLEHKOSEL. Ollie Cosell is the way to follow. Covers your Pelicans and the NBA. Thank you, sir. Appreciate the time.
Absolutely.
When we come back, Leo Haggerty, I forgot. He wants to chime in on the games last night. We'll talk to him next on ESPN.
For the one,
pick up the phone.
You might need to be on the show.
Now back to the Sports Hangover with Gus Kattengill.
800-998-1003. Last night, Iowa and LSU going at it back and forth. And of course, Iowa getting what they got from Caitlin Clark. And man, she had this to say on the game. We'll bring in Leo.
To be honest, like when you step on the court and you're a competitor, like you don't feel that. Like you're there competing. It's 5v5. Like there could have been nobody in the gym and both teams would have competed the exact same way. And yeah, you're playing for a little more with a Final Four on the line. But to me, like, I'm not thinking like, oh my God, there's 15 million people at home watching this game right now. Like, no, like that's not what's happening. It's like, what can I do for my team to help me win the game right now? That's what's going through your mind. If you're too worried about everything else, you're not going to be successful. You got to be completely locked in on, you know, what's happening between the lines. And I thought our team did a really good job of that.
Leo, we've been talking about it heading into the game last night. The anticipation, can it match up? Can it even get to that level of excitement of what we want to do? They go in tight at halftime, man. Both teams had runs early in the first half, and then Caitlin Clark shows you why she's going to go down in history, man, for what she's able to do. What did you think of the game? What did you think of her performance?
Well, you know what, Gus? I was amazed that nobody on the LSU bench, none of the assistant coaches, just kind of poked Kim Mulkey and said, hey, look, Caitlin Clark's killing us. She ends up with 41 points and 12 assists. Gus, that's 64 points she's responsible for. I can't believe nobody said, how about if we double-team her and just take the ball out of her hands? Because she's the one beating us. And that was amazing because that was Iowa's whole game right there. Yeah, they had a couple more other people, but my Lord, they were 41% from threes. They had five more. That's 15 points. That's the ball game right there.
It's interesting to look at it from that perspective, is that, you know, threes being such a big thing. And I thought that was kind of one of the things that LSU lacked this year is being able to shoot that three ball. Look, you see in the NBA every single day, threes being such a big aspect of it. But in college, too, you got to have that. When I look at that matchup coming up with UConn and USC, when you look at the UConn and USC matchup, what made UConn better than the Trojans last night?
You know what? It was a two-woman game there. You know, Paige Buchers and Aaliyah Edwards, you know, 28 and 24 each. UConn shot 48%. USC, they got so enamored with the three, they forgot to go to the basket. And when you look at the stats afterwards, USC was 18 of 20 from the line, but they just didn't get there enough. Mm-hmm. They were got enamored with that three-point line instead of going to the basket, getting fouled, and making free throws. And again, what I think happened with USC is they tried to make 5 points all in one possession, and they panicked just a bit. And that's what happens when you don't go to the tournament. UConn's tournament tested. They know what's going on. They know what they had to do. And you know what? Pacino on the bench, I don't care who the other coach is. You're at a disadvantage. Geno's been there, done that, got the shirt and the hat.
Yeah, no doubt about it, man. Shirt and a hat is a good way to put it. I'm interested on that matchup for sure. Obviously, the fact that they didn't recruit her and, you know, people that are already covering Iowa, like, oh, she knows all too well about this and all that. So that's definitely going to be a huge storyline. But look, South Carolina just looks like a different breed of team, man. I mean, size, athletic ability. I mean, they're undefeated. Is there any shot NC State can surprise everybody?
Yeah, if they can make three.
Really?
The whole balancing act in college basketball right now, and Alabama on the men's side is a perfect example. If you can make threes, you got a puncher's chance. I don't care who you're playing. Same thing here. Yeah, South Carolina, they're the class of the whole group. You know, there's no doubt about it. They're head and shoulders above everybody else. But you know what, Gus? You don't have to win four games. You just have to win one. And if South Carolina comes in and they have their B game and NC State is hitting the threes, look out. Because now you've got to push out on those shooters. That creates passing lanes. That creates cutting lanes. That creates drives to the basket.
Mm-hmm.
That leads to foul trouble. That's the one thing about South Carolina. Their bench, it's not that they're not deep. They just don't play a lot. They play those top five guys. And you know what? I can remember Pat Riley saying, hey, I'll play 10. I'm okay with 8, but I only trust 5. Well, you know, South Carolina, they only trust 5. And, you know, Dawn Staley, she knows what she's doing down there. And believe me, getting beat last year, they're on a mission.
Yeah. It's going to be difficult for them to stop them from that standpoint as well. But we'll see, man, what happens here when they play the Final Four over the weekend. The other Final Four, of course, the men, I don't know. It's interesting when you look at, and we'll get to it a little bit on Friday here, Leo, but a lot of the topic has been about not only NC State and their run, can they get there or not. Bama, they're capable of beating UConn, but more specifically with UConn, it's the, you know, us against them mentality, trying to make themselves underdogs and stuff. We've seen that in other sports, too, where coaches will try to find some way, some shape to kind of lock their players in and focus on that, perhaps, rather than all the noise and expectation levels of trying to you know, repeat as champions.
You know what, Gus? That's going to be a problem with Connecticut because I don't know anybody who's not going to pick them as the favorite to beat NC State. So, again, if I'm Coach Hurley, and I guarantee you this is happening, one of his assistant coaches, they're cutting up clips now of what NC State does. Horn making threes and the big kid inside. I'll tell you, he's a load. And they're going to play that, and they're going to show them, look, guys, again, they only have to beat us once. They don't have to beat us four times. We got to bring our A game. We got to come in. We got to be hungry. And I can remember John Cooper down here when I asked him, I said, Coach, winning a Stanley Cup, okay, but if you went back-to-back, he goes, that's special. And I guarantee you, Coach Hurley said, hey, look, we go back-to-back, that's special.
Speaking of special, I don't know if you heard Adam Schefter this morning, and I had to get you on because I'm walking the dog, I'm listening to him on Unsportsmanlike with Evan Cohen and them, and here it is. Here it is. Adam Schefter on what quarterback might be surprising people.
I think that Michael Penix is going to find his way into round one is the sound of it to me. Now, again, there's still 3-plus weeks left in the process. Teams still are doing their evaluations and interviews and all sorts of work on various prospects. But I think Michael Penix has clearly impressed teams to the point where, to me, I think he's going to be a one.
Chase Daniel, longtime backup here in New Orleans and professional backup overall, now does breakdown of quarterback films. He says, you can't tell me Michael Penix is not one of the top three quarterbacks in this year's class if you're actually broken down film and watched them. If you say different, you don't know ball. Here you go.
You cannot tell me that Michael Penix Jr. is not one of the top two or three quarterbacks in the entire class. After the performance he put on versus Texas, like it is insane. I'm watching this game again. First of all, left tackle, I get your sift in, so you got a free rusher right in your face. What are you going to do? Well, you're going to sidestep it, okay, get back on target, and throw an absolute BB for a touchdown. Like, are you kidding me right now? The pocket movement right here, two hands on the ball, lefty, that perfect southpaw motion, and you fire an absolute strike for another touchdown versus Texas.
You've mentioned that game when you talk about him, that it just blows you away that people aren't looking at him as one of the top quarterbacks in this draft, huh?
Gus, I have told people on your show for the last 2 months, this kid throws the best football I've seen in 10 years. The pass he's talking about was to McNamara, and Texas was in a cover two. Two deep safeties, but they were hugging the goalposts. So he's got about an 8-yard window to play with. Most NFL quarterbacks would have moved off of that to another progression. Penix throws a missile. It only gets like 5 feet above the ground, and it hits McNamara between the two ones on his jersey. I said right now, this guy is it. If you are telling me he's not a number one because we're worried about his knee situations, okay. But when you look at film, and the fact that people are saying he's the fifth or sixth quarterback, you haven't watched the film.
Right.
Because West Coast football, they don't get looked at by these East Coast people because they won't stay up till 11, 12, 1, 2 o'clock to watch it. I have. And believe me, this kid is he's beaten Caleb Williams twice. He's beaten Bo Nix three times. Drake May can't beat Clemson.
Yeah.
All Washington.
I know. I'm with you. Look,
I don't know what they're seeing.
I'm literally going back and forth for it's like every day. I mean, John Forcade, who comes on our show on Thursday, former Saints QB, he's convinced Drake May's the best quarterback of them all. And I'm like, name me a game or a play. Give me a highlight where you went, wow, with Drake May. Just show me. Like, I'm not even asking you a game. Where's the one thing where you're like, my goodness, look at that. You know what I'm saying? And it's not that I don't think he's good or anything of that nature, because I do think at the end of the day, Leo, and this is going to be now the next 3 weeks until we get to the draft, now that we're in April, but I think so much is system in terms of, do you have a good coach in place? Do you have an offensive coordinator in place? And do you have what I've seen the Commanders do this year? What the Texans did last year? To an extent, what your Bucks did, Leo, in Tampa last year, in working with Baker Mayfield and what they did. I never felt like I saw a game where they were trying to get him to do something that he's not comfortable in, or that's not what he does, or something of that. So that makes sense, and I think so much of that's going to go. That's why I'm curious. I'm not even worried if I'm Michael Penix. Am I going in the first round? Because the later you go in the first or early second, you maybe might go to a team that has some talent around it, and maybe you play next year. Maybe you play a year later. I mean, it wouldn't be a bad thing for him to go somewhere. Maybe not even play this year, but I think I'm with you. I think whoever gets him could be a steal, man.
Oh, absolutely. And right now the talk is the Los Angeles Rams. That, can you imagine he could sit behind Stafford for a year and learn the game? And with what
McVay,
a person to learn
right
from.
McVay, well, that's the thing, because then McVay can use what he does best. Does that make sense? You have a guy that understands that aspect of it. Even if it's not him, then he retires. I mean, how many teams have gone out and tried to hire his staff that are underneath the McVay tree, right? So, there you go.
Absolutely. And I'll tell you what, Gus, you talk about, you know, the wow plays. The second wow play with Penix in that same Texas game, he gets flushed out to the left. He's a step from out of bounds. He throws a dart over three guys to the tight end in the back of the end zone. He shows touch, and then he shows velocity. I don't know, and again, I don't know if people have seen enough film on this guy. You need to look at it, because, and you're right, Gus, if he falls down to 15, 16, 17, he's going with a darn good team. Yeah, the Bears. Mm-hmm. The New England Patriots, the Washington Commanders, they ain't going to win a whole lot of games. I don't care who the quarterback is. Pick any one of those three they're talking about. It's not going to be good. So, you know what? I got a friend of mine living in San Antonio, and she goes to me and goes, what are you seeing these guys? I said, I see guys that can't win. I want a winner. That's why I want Penix.
Yeah, I hear you, man. Thank you so much. Leo Haggerty, Amped Up Sports. We'll see you on Friday, sir.
Take care, brother. And, hey, it'll be a great week, and now we're wrapping it up next weekend.
Yeah, looking forward to it as Final Fours are set for sure. Seven games left in their NBA schedule with the Pels. They wrapped up practice a little bit ago. Sports Hangover continues next. Final segment on ESPN New Orleans.
They say that once you give in control, you'll own your brain forever.
Now back to the Sports Hangover with Gus Kattengau.
First and foremost, I love that group in our locker room. They bring it every night. Even when they get down, they don't quit. They stay together. They don't complain. They go out and fight. So the resiliency is at a high level. But our margin for error is small without Brandon and without Jose. We're missing 20-plus points, our leader in assists. So we have to start the game better. And we've done that the last few games, but we didn't tonight. So we got to put together more of a 48-minute game. And right now, it's around 32 to 35. We got to get in the 40s. That'll give us a better opportunity to win.
That is head coach Willie Green following the game last night. Pels now 1-3 in the first four games of a six-game homestand. Orlando Wednesday, San Antonio on Friday, and then at Phoenix on Sunday on their turf. See how that goes. It's just in. Devin Booker can't wait. Trey Murphy last night on Book.
That just came out with a lot of pace, a lot of energy. He hit some tough shots, but also he contributed to it a little bit as well.
He also had this to say, what was the biggest takeaway from the game?
Just coming out first quarter and really setting the tone. We played probably a good 28 minutes, and it's just not enough, especially against good teams like that, especially with guys that can hit shots. So I think that's the biggest thing.
One of the things that's interesting is you keep hearing not only him, coach, others say, look, they work on a lot of this stuff here. It's just not happening.
That's something we go over in film. Spacing is our key. When we don't have spacing, then we're not able to really run good offense. And so we just got to be really paying attention to getting to our corners as well as high slots and, you know, getting the ISO spacing for, you know, Z and CJ as well.
I think one of the things that you also will see moving forward here as well is how the team kind of combats and goes back and forth for teams using Zion in certain ways, and especially with the team trying to use him at the five.
I mean, biggest thing for us when we have him at the five is rebounding. If we're able to rebound, then offensively, the teams aren't able to guard us because there's just so much space on the court, and then Z is able to operate and get to wherever he wants to.
Which is why a lot of people wonder why Jonas is not in there or not. But again, it all depends on how the reboundings, the small lineups. I mean, look, coach is going to go to it. He's not going to change it on April 2nd, even though it kind of does feel like it. I don't know. I don't know if that's what I felt like this team did at the beginning of the season. Most of the season. But yeah, that's where we are then. You heard Ali talk about Dyson Daniels as being one of the positive bright lights yesterday. You did see him play a lot better.
He was really good. He was physical defensively. You can see he something clicked. And he was active, getting steals, getting deflections. And he'll continue to grow and get better. But We all like what he did on the floor tonight.
25 minutes, he got 9 points, 5 assists, 2 steals, 7 rebounds. That's the kind of stuff that you were missing, obviously, with him being injured and now back healthy, is going to be able to provide you and help you. See if the team can pick up a win tomorrow against Orlando. Tonight, Lakers-Raptors. It's a game we'll be keeping an eye on. Rockets and T-Wolves. Rockets are real close to that final play-in spot. Spurs and Nuggets. And then also Clippers and Kings go L.A., I guess. And Mavericks and Warriors go Golden State. So that's our scoreboard watching. When we come back, we'll see you on Wednesday. Midway point of the week. Matt Moscone, after further reviews, got a lot to talk about. LSU baseball lost and the women's basketball team lost. Sports Hangover on ESPN New Orleans.